Explore the tropics at Whole Foods Market through April 16th. Save on juicy finds like yellow mangoes at 5 for $5 with Prime. Sweet Dacopan citrus is back, just $3.49 per pound with Prime. Plus, save on seasonal favorites like dragon fruit, kiwi, pineapple, and more. In the meat department, pick up animal welfare certified meats with tropical-inspired marinades. And be sure to try the spicy Hawaiian pizza, back for a limited time, only at Whole Foods Market.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Today, we are diving into the world of cults, and we know that we have a lot of fellow conspiracy realists who have their own personal experience with cults or cultic organizations, but as we are wont to do in this show, we went to some primary sources. We are not diving into this alone. We are fortunate to be joined today with Liz Iacuzzi and Tyler Meesom, the creators of Was I in a Cult, a podcast that we're all big fans of in our personal lives. Tyler, Liz, thanks so much for coming on the show today with us.
Thank you for having us, guys.
Thanks, guys. We love your show, too.
Love is mutual.
Well, that's good to know you didn't open up with, we hate your show. And
that's why we're here. Not a good opener. No, that's never a good opener. No.
Now, Tyler, you are an award-winning filmmaker. You have so many titles under your belt. We were talking about some of these off-air, things like Murder Among the Mormons, An Honest Liar, the list goes on. Liz, you are a actor, you're a writer, you're a comedian, you're a fitness trainer. You're also, as we were discussing off-air, you have done voice work for some of my colleagues' favorite video games. Matt, did I blow up your spot?
No, you're good. I like Command & Conquer. Just don't worry about it. It's cool. It was the later stuff, like the much later Command & Conquer games.
Specifically Command & Conquer 4, Tiberian Twilight, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we want to establish the background here, because Was I in a Cult is a unique show in the world of podcasting, and I would advance also that it is remarkably distinct in the discourse about cults or cultic organizations overall. We know what the show is. We've listened to episodes. We quite enjoy them. But perhaps you all could, in your own words, tell us and our audience a little bit about what was I in a cult?
Well, the show looks at the cultic experience from the individual perspective, which we often don't get enough of, I believe, in media and entertainment. We will cover the salacious cult leader, which everybody's always obsessed with. It seems to be obsessed with. But the show really takes you on a journey of one person's personal story, getting manipulated into a cult, what their life was like before that, what their life was like inside the cult, and then most importantly, how they got out and how they rebuilt their lives. And it's documentary style in nature, and we use levity as much as possible because tragedy and comedy, I feel they're
brothers and sisters. How's that?
Yeah, and it's like medicine, you know, it's easier to swallow some of the darker stuff when you can bring some lightness to it.
Yeah, I can't imagine it just being a full-on tragic deep dive into the sadness and messed up things that can occur, at least when you get into a cult-like group, or maybe a full-on cult. Who knows? That's a question for a little bit down here.
Right. I mean, we found that, you know, these situations that these people find themselves in, and now that they've left, they can actually look back with a bit of levity and disbelief. And so we're able to kind of mirror that in some ways. And never do we poke fun or laugh at the individual. But oftentimes we will look at the situation in which they were in or the situation in which they found themselves in, unfortunately, and kind of just look at it with a bit of levity and lightness, which I think is better than 45 minutes of sadness and abuse and brain manipulation.
And I think the show is meant to be inspirational and hopeful. And you don't really think about that when you think of a cult show, you know, because cults are like doom and gloom and like scary. And, you know, I think a lot of times people approach the cultic world from this sort of voyeuristic point of view where you're like, look at all those crazy people in there. And they're watching it from the safety of, you know, behind their TVs or whatever they're watching or listening to and thinking, oh, wow, I would never be involved in something like that, but I'm fascinated. Our show debunks a lot of the myths around cults and what constitutes a cult. And I think it really the goal is really to humanize the cult experience and to show you, no, this isn't some dumb lemming, vulnerable loser. You know, this is you. This is your uncle. This is your mom. This is your sister. And to show you how it happens, because there are over what, Tyler?
There's tens of thousands of cults
active in America alone today. And to expose not just the big cults that everybody knows by name, like Scientology or NXIVM is a big one right now because of everything that just went down, but also to get into the smaller cults that people don't realize are cults. Or there's one-on-one cults even. You know, there's family cults. There's small group cults that don't get to make it to mainstream media. And our show dives into all different types.
Well, that's the thing, too. You say, it, you know, the show isn't doom and gloom, as you might imagine a cult show would be, but they wouldn't work if they were all doom and gloom. There has to be some attracting element that makes someone stoked about joining in with this group of people, or they feel some kinship, or they're looking for something. And it's not always like broken, destitute, or emotionally bereft people that get taken in by these, right?
Right.
I think the common denominator of people who join cults, and some people are obviously born into a cult. I think the common denominator of people who join cults, it isn't that they're glassy-eyed. It isn't that they're broken. In fact, studies have shown that the people who join cults aren't mentally unstable. Oddly enough, it's quite the antithesis of that. People who join cults are, by and large, idealists. They want to make the world a better place. They want to make themselves a better place. They want to get into heaven. They want to fulfill their dreams. They want to, for goodness sakes, they want to learn how to grow crops in a farm. Or they want to just be, you know, have a strong fitness level. And eventually they get taken in by a guru or a charismatic cult leader who takes advantage of their idealism and their dreams. And that's the sad part, that people are being taken advantage of who really just, for the most part, want to be good.
And it comes from a noble place. And I immensely appreciate that distinction. When we had spoken earlier, one of the things that –
one of the things that was always a question to me was what is the inspiration for these two folks to create this show, to bring it into the world? Because it always struck me as just fundamentally different from, say, the more exploitative things you might see candidly in like a 2020 documentary or what have you. There is, as you emphasized earlier, there is this tremendous human moment, and your guests really travel with you to some harrowing emotional spaces, to the point where I'm sure many audience members who haven't heard the show yet have to ask themselves, do Liz and or Tyler have experience with an organization that, if not a cult, could be described as cultic?
Dum, dum, dum.
Dum, dum, dum.
You ask yes. everyone this question, Liz. Maybe it's time you asked yourself this question.
yes. In fact, I was in a acting class when I first moved to Los Angeles, early 20s, was in a toxic relationship, living with this toxic man. And I had done comedy in Chicago for years and commercial work and voiceover work for... Apparently, what did I do?
Video games.
Dreams do come true, Liz. You've forgotten all about it.
It's true. And I had moved to LA and sort of was like, well, what about, you know, real acting outside of comedy? I wonder if I should take an acting class with somebody who's going to like push me and, you know, be real with me and get me to my depth and all of the things actors think they want, right? And my boyfriend at the time was going to this woman who, I didn't really get it, but it was like life coaching. And he was coming home every night and being like, oh my God, this woman's amazing. Like, she's changing my life. It's so amazing. And she also teaches this acting class. And he wasn't an actor. He's like, I really think you should go. Like, I met a bunch of the people in the class. They're fantastic. Go. So I ended up going to her acting class and joining the acting class, meeting, you know, people. I didn't know anybody in LA, and met a bunch of amazing people. The talent in the room was fantastic. The people were fantastic. And stayed for a few years, and it turned into this self-help cult. And then when I realized there was a lot going on in this group, where it started off as classes, and then she would require you to take a life class to be in her acting class and then do retreats. And it just, the commitment continued, and the financial commitment continued, and the emotional and financial abuse just went crazy. And my friend who was in it, we were just like, there's something off with this environment. And you start to realize, like, all my friends were in this class. You start to think, like, oh, she's having us talk to strangers at coffee shops about joining this class and the work. And there's now this vernacular used and a whole language being explored. And you're starting to feel like you have this secret that nobody else has. And anyway, she sent me an article like towards the end, and it was just like literally 10 ways you know you're in a cult from like some magazine. And I just read it, and it was like, check, 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 check. And I was like, oh my God, this is a fucking cult. And then shortly after, got out of there, did a bunch of research, you know, did some therapy, was like, what was that? You know, because I'm from Chicago. I trust people. I trusted people. LA makes you a little hardened, and I still trust people, but I have a much better radar now. And so that experience really opened my eyes to manipulation tactics, which I wasn't aware of. I didn't know anything, to be fair with you, about cults. You know, I was just as naive as the person that thinks, oh, cults, Jim Jones, Charlie Manson, you know, like these big, scary environments where you drink Kool-Aid and voluntarily kill yourself. And in my research and getting out of that acting class, realized that cults are way more ubiquitous than that. And they can live in acting classes. That, you know, she's since stopped teaching acting. She went on to become some healer. I mean, she's still going, by the way, guys.
This is what I wanted to ask you. Was she just an individual actor, or was she using the same tactics that other large groups that we know about use, or was it associated in any way?
So her dad was a famous actor. So she used that for her cred a lot. And she studied with a man named Roy London, who was, I don't know if you know the acting world at all, but he was a pretty renowned acting coach for like Gina Davis and that era of actors. And she studied with him for like 11 years. And I think she tried to be an actor herself. A lot of these cult leaders are failed blanks, right? They do try to make it in the real world. They, you know, look at Charlie Manson. He wanted to be
a musician. I can't tell you how many cult leaders are musicians. Well,
yeah.
So many.
Right.
Mel Lyman, the Yahweh Group, mm-hmm. Charles Manson, so many of them. The one who's in, there's so many, I can't go over it, but they all want to be kind of famous.
Well, the ones from Wild Wild Country as well. Didn't they have
that's right.
There you go.
Band? That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cults form a lot of bands because you can build group mind.
Right.
It's a great way to sell albums. Trying to have them, your cult.
Right, exactly. You'll sell about 30 if you're not that good at it. Right. But
most importantly, this is a legacy Hollywood person, basically.
Yes.
That comes from money, that is established in the industry, mm-hmm. that has that cred that you're seeking. And it's an easy, you know, kind of like way in for you. Like, okay, I can see this is legit. My trust is in you. And then it's almost like, what do they say? Like a crab boiling. You know, you don't even notice that you're boiling until it's almost too late. And thankfully for you, it wasn't too late. But that's sort of how these things work, right? It's sort of a slow process. You don't go in and day one realize, oh, wow. It takes a little time and realization, but it sounds like, you know, this was masquerading as an acting class and then eventually, you know, starting to kind of get a little
That's
weird.
That's exactly right, Mr. Brown.
You know, we say it often, no one joins a cult. No one is going to sign up to join a cult. What they join is a movement or a church or a fitness class. And over slow indoctrination, planned indoctrination, they eventually or find themselves in a cult, and then it's really difficult to get out. They're in too deep, and everyone they know and everything they know and everyone in the outside is either evil or not up to your standards, and you find yourself stuck there.
And it doesn't mean they're being locked in cages or anything. It doesn't mean they're being held against their will. They have essentially become addicted to the cult experience, right?
In the beginning, it's the most dangerous because I don't know if you've ever been in an abusive relationship or if any of your listeners can relate to that, but I think we've all either, we've been able to touch an abusive relationship, whether it's our own or our sister or somebody we know. And the sort of breakdown of how that happens is very similar to the breakdown of how you get into a cult. And the beginning is something called love bombing, right? Are you guys familiar with this?
Yes, very much so. Yep.
So the love bombing is the most dangerous because that's the fake part. That's the sweep you off your feet part, right? I met this amazing guy and he said he's never imagined anybody but me and oh my God. And you feel this love bombing, but it's doubled down in cults because it's not just the cult leader that's love bombing you. Usually it's maybe even not the cult leader. It's all of the recruiters. It's all of the people in the environment, right? You probably could relate even if you go to like a soul cycle class maybe, right? Or like on a smaller level or some sort of exercise class where you walk in and then everybody's come, oh, you did a great job. That was great. And you did 17 push-ups and I only thought you could do 13 or whatever it is. It's you get attacked after and you get praised for the work you've done. And that's all the love bombing. That's all to like get you feeling good and coming back tomorrow for the next class. And I think then that's that what you were talking about, that indoctrination process, because that starts to fade, but slowly, right? So you're getting love bombed. And then one day the leader might say, yeah, but you were never going to amount to anything. But you're so this, you're so great. So then they neg you. So then they say something that speaks to your innermost fears usually, right? And the way they get to those fears is in the beginning, they create this very safe environment that you feel safe to vulnerably share your fears because you're watching the other people in the group do the same thing. So you're like, oh, well, look at her. She shared this vulnerable thing about her innermost fear. And now I'm being asked to, and I feel safe doing it. But then they're using that against you later, the cult leader is. So it's very, very manipulative.
And additionally, some of the next steps would be things like the moving goalpost. You can do as much as you can, but it's never quite enough.
There's always another rung of that ladder.
Right.
They love to move goalposts too when it's doomsday. Yeah. That's my favorite goalpost move.
Oh, that's the best one. It's on the
show. We were looking at it upside down.
And it's your and it's your fault, followers. Right. It's your fault the world did not end in 1843 or 1976 or 2022. Spoiler alert for any cult members in the audience. It's gonna soldier along. But I love what you guys are pointing out about how, in our very early conversations, full disclosure, folks, I am tremendously biased because I did assist in some of the early days of this show. One of our earlier conversations, you both introduced me to this term that we've used already on the air today, cultic organization, not necessarily a cult, right? Because like you were saying, Tyler, nobody would just wake up one day and say, I'm going to join a cult. That's my thing today. Just like a lot of places that are called cults by outsiders wouldn't describe them as such ever, or wouldn't describe themselves as such. It's also that interesting, like not every cultic organization, you guys taught me this, is necessarily religious or even ostensibly spiritual in nature. So we've defined some of the key aspects of what makes somebody vulnerable to this manipulation, or what kind of manipulation occurs in the course of indoctrination. But what would you all say are some of the key defining traits of a cult, or what we would describe as a cultic organization? What makes them different from an actual, movement?
I mean, that is the age-old question. One man's cult is another man's church, right? And how does one distinctly define a cult? And it is hard to actually say this is a cult and this isn't. You know, this is football, this is baseball. There's a separation between the two. But cults can be a lot of things. And some people think full-on churches are cults. Some people think CrossFit is a cult, for goodness sakes. Some people think, an acting class. How does that turn into a cult? So it's really difficult to define what is a cult, but there are some tried and true. Now, just so you know, Liz and I, there are some really great cult experts out there. We know a bit about cults. We aren't the experts on this. We do host a show about cults, but some of the things that are defining measures of a cult, I think, is one, they try to limit the access to the outside world. They don't want you to listen to anything that's outside. They don't want you to talk to people who are in the outside world. And I think one of the most telling things is when you leave said cult, they kind of cut you off. They no longer want to be a part of you. And I think that's one of the defining features of a cult. Another defining feature is a charismatic leader. By and large, one person who is, for the most part, a charismatic individual who controls his or her flock, and they pledge allegiance to this particular individual. Now, we have seen a bit of a variance in cults of late, and it's been very strange seeing the transfer of cults and the rebirth of cults. In fact, there's new cults nowadays where, 10, 15 years ago, if you wanted to join a cult, you went to a commune, you went to a church, you went to a meeting, you went somewhere and you got with a group of individuals socially. And look, we're social animals. We like to be around like-minded individuals like us. But nowadays, we've seen this surge of, if you will, internet cults. People who, and it was, I think, exacerbated by the pandemic, people who find their similar mentalities online. So there are, for example, like Q or Proud Boys or Patriot Boys or whatever it may be, these individuals who join this cult and don't necessarily have a leader. The leader is, in fact, the ideology itself, which can take many forms and can alter all over the place. So cults are, they're tough to define, Liz. I don't know if you have your defining.
Well, just to add to that, I think the leader is important, right? Like what distinguishes a woman's group versus a cult that is a woman's group is, I would say, the narcissistic, sociopathic or leader, right? But I think for the individual's experience, you can't always detect that. So I think as somebody experiencing a cult going, is there's weird, when you start to feel like your opinions are not valid, when you start to feel like you can't speak out, when you see something weird and you speak to it and you get reprimanded, when you find yourself falling in line, right, with the yes men. Everybody's like in my cult, there was stuff like she would call somebody out. Like, do you see this person stuck in their head, right? Because they're trying to be an actor and be vulnerable. And then she'd sort of humiliate an individual, and then everybody in the group would have to agree. Oh, I see that, right? So if you start to see this, everybody agreeing and falling in line, also when you start to feel like you're losing your own critical thought. Now, that one's really hard because that's a really slow and that's really a slow process of the indoctrination process. But when you just feel like, okay, I don't trust myself anymore and my intuition isn't being heard, when you start to feel like your intuition is being stuffed down or being told it's something else, you're probably in some sort of manipulative, abusive, cultic type environment.
We'll pause for a word from our sponsors and then return with Liz Iacuzzi and Tyler Meesom of Was I in a Cult?
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with The 7 every weekday. So follow The 7 right now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island opens its gates April 20th.
And we're back with the host of Was I in a Cult?
I'm forming a picture in my head from everything you've been talking about right there. Do you guys think it's possible for a corporate structure and a corporate culture, like of a huge, let's say a massive company, like I'm just going to say like a Facebook or an Apple,
sure,
where you've got these charismatic leaders that exist. No, I mean, it's not a one-to-one cult leader for like a Steve Jobs or, you know, any of these other guys necessarily. But I there's some similarities that I'm at least forming an image of in my head when I think about being yes persons essentially to whatever these charismatic leaders have to say and what orders they give. Though it is kind of just their role as a CEO, right? Or whatever. Right. Anyway, okay. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I think the business world, actually, there are elements that can be cultic. I think, you know, it's very similar. There can be a leader or a CEO. There can be a, we want you to join this company. And then you're kind of stuck in that job and you can't leave. So I think we as humans, especially in America, are kind of trained in some aspects for cultic behavior. It's as simple as going to a store and being told that, you know, that shirt looks really good on you. You should buy it. We're trained to obey. We listen. We're supposed to follow rules, and we're supposed to listen to our boss, and we're supposed to listen to our elders and our parents and our superiors. And so in many ways, we're kind of set up for being in a cultic situation. And yeah, I think businesses can take advantage of an individual in some ways. I mean, again, a person can join a company and want to rise the ranks and be good and make money. And a charismatic leader or a narcissist, as be him a CEO or a guru, can take advantage of that and manipulate that and actually use that person's intentions and idealism against them to the point where it's just to feed them and feed their ego.
Well, I mean, so much of leadership and like the mentality behind leading a big organization like that is to, it doesn't matter if what you say is the truth. In fact, it's better if you control the narrative by just repeating the same lie over and over and over again to the point where people believe it and actually believe it internally, not just as like a coping mechanism or a way of just like getting by day to day. I think that's true on many layers of business, but specifically with leadership within a specific organization, especially if, you know, there's really bad behavior going on in terms of like, you know, maybe some illegal business practices or, you know, things like with Bear Stearns and we see with, you know, the collapse of certain Wall Street companies, Wall Street organizations. But I think we see that even just within, you know, day to day, like within working for a company, you oftentimes have people using flattery to tell you what you're doing is great all the time, even if you know personally that might not have been your best work, and someone's telling you over and over again that it is, you start to kind of believe in yourself in this almost toxic way. I just think it's interesting.
Right. Flattery and fear, which is another strong tactic of a cult leader.
Right.
You know, the cult leader is going to show up and you don't know if they're going to love you or hate you, if they're going to scorn you or kiss you. And so you're always kind of on edge. And I think bosses can do that as well. I do think, you know, and we've heard a lot about this, the great resignation, people leaving jobs and not taking normal corporate jobs anymore. And I think it's kind of nice. And I think there are a lot of people who are leaving religions and recognizing I don't need to be told what to do. And so there might be a kind of awakening against those individuals who want to control us and use fear and flattery to keep us in our place.
Yeah. And I think it's, Matt, I think it just is how much that leader knows how damaged they are, honestly, because I think it's fair to say 99% of cult leaders are very damaged. And a lot of them have a lot of, ironically, weird sexual trauma as children. So they're already coming from a mentally ill point standpoint. They wouldn't be cult leaders if they were healthy. Right. So if you have that charismatic CEO who is also quite damaged and looking to fulfill blank, then that can go into dangerous territory. I mean, I would call Jeffrey Epstein a cult leader. That's a full cult. I'd call R. Kelly a full cult leader. So I just think it varies. And I bet we could break down a lot of corporations and figure out the cult within them.
One thing that also stands out here in this conversation is that it's very easy for somebody with the benefit of being outside of a personal experience to think, oh, I'd never fall for that, or I'd never find myself in that situation. But there was something I was thinking about in preparation for our conversation today, which is that, is there not kind of a cult out there for everyone? It depends on where you are in life. It depends on what the nature of your idealism may be and how it could be leveraged perhaps against you. I think that when you're naming specific examples of cult-like organizations, it's not just corporate America, it's any community endeavor could be twisted by somebody who wants to impose cultic behaviors on, well, let's say people who are innocent. You know, if any sin they committed, if sin there was simply the quote unquote sin of trusting someone, especially at the beginning there. How do you parse this? Do you see commonalities when you're speaking with the folks that you all are interviewing? Do they seem to have stories with almost the same beats, or is each one its own unique case?
Yeah, again, in our show, we talk to one individual and we interview them for hours, and we compress that down and edit it down to a nice sizable, listenable, hour show. And they go through the entire story of their childhood, their joining the church or religion or cult, and then, their life within the cult. And I do think there are a number of similarities, and they are idealists. A lot of times when people join cults, there's a transition phase. They just went through a difficult breakup. They just moved. They're poor. They need something. Oddly enough, it's not just poor people. In fact, cults don't want – everyone thinks cult wants sheep and followers and workers, and they do. But by and large, cult leaders want type A personalities. They want smart, hardworking go-getters, because for the most part, cult leaders are fucking lazy. They just don't want to do anything. So they have other people do it for them. And rich people are actually very prone to joining cults, especially those who are inherited money, because they don't feel like they deserve this kind of money. So they have to give it to a good entity and, a nice endeavor. So really, it's kind of hard. The people we have interviewed, by and large, are creative. They're smart. They're go-getters. They're interesting, unique individuals who really just wanted to make the world a bit of a better place and got taken advantage of.
But what's also interesting is, outside of all that, the way they get in is very subtle. And it's usually a friend saying, hey, there's this really cool book club I'm in, or this presentation, or this class I've been taking. You should come. I think you'd really like it. And it's that little. Like, and think about your own group of friends, right? You all sort of gravitate towards the same things. You have things you're interested in. It's why you're friends in the first place, because you have commonalities, and that's comforting, and that feels good. And that's what's been most interesting to me, is like, it's a family member or a friend doing the recruiting. And that's why cults are so dangerous, I think, because you trust your friends and you trust your family members. And you would never think, this person would set me off in this dangerous environment. And most of the times, the recruiter doesn't know that they're doing that at the time.
I want to talk well, there's so many topics you've covered. I'm looking through this, things that we've talked about recently on this show, like Jehovah's Witnesses. We talked about Nexium at length. I see here that you interviewed someone named Jessica Joan,
yeah,
about Nexium. I'd
fantastic.
Love to go into that, just maybe get some of the perspective that she brought to that same conversation, like how she got in, maybe how she got out, just some things you learned from her about Nexium.
She was a remarkable story and a remarkable storyteller.
And she's a remarkable human.
Yeah.
She's quite the badass.
Yeah, she's a badass. And she had a very interesting and unique childhood. And I think there is, in some aspects, a commonality among people who join. They may have mother issues or father issues or didn't get attention or love. I'm generalizing, or I'm not, but there can be that. She had a unique childhood in that her mother was arrested and her father ran a major drug smuggling organization, making and selling and transporting drugs across the country. So she had a very unique childhood, and she just wanted to search for something. She was looking for something. She got into the party world in LA, and she realized that didn't feel good, and I need to work on myself. So coincidentally, someone said, hey, you should come to this little workshop. It's a self-help group. And she goes to a nice little self-help group and they make her feel good and they tell her they have the keys to the kingdom and they can make her world better. And then recruiters jump on her and say, you have to sign up today. Sign up for this class. Sign up today. And if you sign up today, you get a discount. And we have to look for that in this world, folks. Sign up today. Get it now. If you get it now, you get 50% off. You get 25% off. You know, in hindsight, she even said, go home. Think about it. If you're going to make a major decision of financial or personal, do some research. And for goodness sakes, research is not difficult to do in today's world. It's on your phone and your hand. But she signed up. She basically signed up.
For the class.
And signed up for the class. And then
what was interesting about her story, too, is that she got a lot out of these classes in the beginning. I mean, her life was getting better. She felt like she was progressing and thriving, and it was giving her things that she had never been able to get, especially in regular therapy. This was like a deeper experience of that for her, and she felt good for a long time. And then she was slowly being indoctrinated by Allison Mack, who, as we know, because you guys know Nexium, was the right hand of Keith and who was running the vow. And that's how she got into the vow. But you'll have to hear the episode to hear what happens.
Yeah, we don't want to go too deep, but she did get into the club and the inner sanctum of this. And I mean, Keith Raniere is a piece of work.
I think he's the most dangerous cult leader in existence.
Possibly.
I think he's one of the most, I don't know a more dangerous cult leader than him, to be honest.
Yeah. Remarkable.
But she did work with the FBI to help take down that bastard. So it's a good episode. It's a great story. And she's able to tell it with a lot of levity, and she's, you just feel how strong and empowered she is from the experience. And that's what I think is really important, too, to show that these people aren't just broken. You know, they're actually thriving and better off a lot of the time from doing the healing and learning and, you know, just like any traumatic experience anybody experiences or goes through.
And we'll take a quick break here. We'll be right back.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island opens its gates April 20th.
And we've returned.
We hear so much about these, you know, kind of pyramid scheme situations, or where it's all about bilking people out of money and that's the end game. Have you run across anything you might describe as like a benevolent cult that really just thrives on people's attention, isn't always trying to get money out of them, or maybe there isn't necessarily an entirely toxic end game? Like, maybe there is a cult that works for people. Like, what differentiates like a movement or like a self-help regimen from a cult? Is it always that in the end there's some toxic knife twist or rug pull, or, you know, well, is it something else?
I think that is your definition, right? There are a lot of good groups that are thriving, doing exactly what they set out to do, and their intentions are pure. I think the reason it's called a cult is because of all those other factors. So sadly, I don't think you're ever going to find a well-intentioned cult. You might find a well-intentioned self-help group, or a well-intentioned church, or a well-intentioned blank, but when it gets into the cult word, that's...
I think much like individuals, no one joins a cult. I think I can't say that no leader says, I'm going to start a cult. But I think in many ways, people say they want to start a church, or I do want to start a self-help group because I do think I have knowledge that I can impart to individuals. I mean, the Jim Jones Church, which eventually ended not so well, that was in the 60s in San Francisco, a great church. That was a non-segregated religion that actually did do really great things for the community and for individuals, and then it just went a little too far. So I think narcissistic cult leaders, you know, start to believe themselves, and they start to get a little bit too engrossed in what they're doing, and then they too lock themselves off from the community, and they too lock themselves off from any outside sources or outside voices.
And they begin to believe their own magic.
It's certainly where the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid came from, right? Drinking
exactly.
Your own Kool-Aid, or just drinking
technically
the Kool-Aid.
It was Flavor Aid, though.
That's fair, but I think it's a very valuable turn of phrase that I think everyone understands what it means.
I mean, I'm a strong believer in therapy. I think it's important to try and better yourself. I think it's important to try and learn something new, or to chase your dreams, to join an acting class, to join a fitness group, to join something that makes you better. Just make sure that it's licensed.
There are those that think therapy's a cult, though. There are those that think, you know, organized psychotherapy. I mean, obviously, that was a big part of Scientology, was a backlash against therapy. But I mean, this is a silly example, but if you watch the show Ted Lasso, he is very anti-therapy for a while. Right. And there are people like that, that you can say, oh, no, these are people that are just in it for the money. They're overcharging. It's absurd. And they're really not doing anything for me but like big upping their own egos. And I'm being devil's advocate here. I'm just saying, it is a tricky area where one person's cult is another person's self-help or self-actualization.
Right.
And there are cultic therapists also. So it is tricky.
I think, you know, like NXIVM, for example, they actually prided themselves, and Keith Raniere prided himself on not being therapists. We don't do what therapists do. But the fact of the matter is therapists are licensed. They're good at what they do, and they train for that. So, I mean, look, one thing we wanted to do with the show is to make people aware that cults are prevalent. In fact, I think they're more prevalent today than ever. And they can get you. And everyone says, I wouldn't join a cult. But it can happen. Society has enabled it. And cults are very good at getting you in. They're very good at making sure that you join and that you don't leave.
Yeah, right. Hotel California and so on, I believe, is a reference to that. There's something I wanted to bring us to at some point in our conversation that has particularly impressed me, and it's something you've hit on a couple of times already, which is I was profoundly impressed by not just the amount of levity that you all bring to these challenging and at times, honestly, heartbreaking conversations, but there's something that always tickled me, which is that Liz, you and Tyler have this pretty delightful habit of ribbing each other at times, even when you're doing, you know, just like interstitial voiceover, and it leads to a conversation that some of us were having a number of months ago, which is simply put this. How do you navigate humor in a show like yours? How do you use humor and laughter in a helpful rather than derogatory or mocking manner? And to what degree did you calculate that versus did it come out organically?
I think Tyler and I have a similar sense of humor, which came about organically when we started working on this project. I, as a writer, I'm a comedy writer, and I like to take dark subjects and bring humor to them. It's sort of where I go instinctually. I've always believed that, you know, it's a way to digest the harder information. It's why late night TV, you know, exists. It's why they do the monologues and they're talking about the news, and maybe like Kuwait was bombed, but he's adding a joke to it so that you can swallow it and don't want to kill yourself, right? John Oliver does it really well in his show. You know, he takes really, really dark, intense subject matters and adds comedy. I've always been drawn to that kind of way to digest information personally, especially really intense information. I think the feedback, especially from the guests themselves, has been the most satisfying. They are so grateful to be part of a show that isn't so like, oh my God, you poor people. And, you know, it's just us in a room talking about, yeah, some hard stuff happens, but that doesn't mean it has to define you. It doesn't mean that you have to live in that trauma anymore. You know, the people we're talking to are healthy. They've come out the other side and they're healed. And hopefully that is showing that people can heal from trauma and laugh about it and have fun and still enjoy life. I think to actually just to continue to live in the sadness of what has ever happened to you is not the show that Tyler and I wanted to make. So how do we do it? I don't know. How do we do it,
Tyler? I don't know. We're still figuring it out. But I think just from a storytelling sense, in my films, I learned very early. My first film was Sons of Perdition, and it was about kids who were kicked out of a polygamous cult, 16-year-old, 15-year-old boys who were, you know, in a Mormon polygamist cult, and then one day they're just thrown to the curb and they don't have mommies and they don't have daddies and they don't know anything about the outside world. And we showed an early cut of it to these filmmakers, and the best piece of advice I've been given at that time that's really moved my career is have a funny scene. Show a bit of happiness because it's so sad that it's hard to swallow. But also the sad makes the happy happier, and the happy makes the sad sadder. And in many of my films, Murder Among the Mormons, for example, we have a scene that is a laugh out loud, silly scene of, if you haven't seen it, guys shooting guns and, you know, driving around in the desert and just being, you know, dipshits. Mm-hmm. But and that's fun, and it may feel a little bit out of place. But later, when there's actual violence with the, I don't want to give it away, but when there's actual violence with those kind of weapons, it shows the heaviness of it, the weight of it, because you've seen the other side of it. You can now see the despair of it on one end. So I think it's important just storytelling to kind of show the balance between happy and sad.
Yeah. I think with our guests too, we're very cognizant that this is trauma. And the one thing Tyler and I have said from the beginning is we are not here to re-traumatize anybody. That's not what this show is about. And if they're too raw, too freshly out of the cult, unfortunately, they can't be on our show because we just don't want to re-traumatize people. But we take our cues from our guests. And I mean, most of our guests are laughing a lot through it. I mean, then there are the moments of we hit on that core experience, and then we give it the breath, you know, that deserves. When it's serious and it's sad, then we let that live in its space and give it its space. But then we might make a joke to bring you back to, you know, it's like a palate cleanser. You can take a breath after hearing about some deeply sad sexual experience that's hard to, you know, frankly, hard to hear.
kind of reminds me of like the time that I've probably been the most starstruck on this show in the history of being on this show is when we talked to Mike Render from the Church of Scientology. Mm. And that guy's hilarious. Like, mm-hmm. he is just absolutely self-aware. He knows what he was. He knows what he is. He is open, as you could possibly imagine, about, like, I mean, to the point where we had to, like, vet it with legal to make sure we weren't going to get in trouble, because he would just, you know, tell all. But he had that same levity just around, you know, he's talking about some really traumatic things and obviously would get serious, but he had that that hindsight and that ability to kind of, like, that you're describing with someone that's truly disconnected, you know, from that cult. And it was just such a remarkable conversation, and it really does to me describe what you're describing in someone that can truly take a step back and laugh at themselves a little bit.
We have an episode, it's a two-parter, it's about a woman named Joanne, and she joined this really strange, weird polygamous cult down in the central Utah, and the things that she talks about and the funny things they did, it is hilarious, her life and what she did. And she looks back at it like, I can't believe the incredulousness of me doing a seance, you know, and me burning my underwear and marrying, you know, having to...
Making roast beef for Jesus because he was coming right, coming right, back that night.
Right. And having to, you know, be in a barn and okay the marriage of her husband to another woman. Like, it's ripe for comedy. So...
And with her, she wrote a book called It's Not About the Sex, My Ass. So she already wrote a very funny book. Yes. and told her story with a lot of levity. So we had just as much fun with that episode because she allowed it.
And that's I love what you're pointing out about the sharp relief that we see these situations put in, you know, the humor and the heavy coexist and complement one another. And I think it makes the experiences of these people more real too, for folks who are outsiders who are hearing this, because now it's not some victim on some true crime show. It's someone who is just as human as anybody else you would meet at the grocery store. And when we're talking about this, we're talking about human moments, we can only unfortunately assume that some of the people in the audience today have a loved one who is in a cultic organization, especially since, as you pointed out, Tyler, the pandemic has done a lot for QAnon. That's just one example. We also may have some folks who are starting to have second feelings about an organization they joined that they were quite excited about. So with that, I think one of the most important questions we have to ask is, for everyone listening today, do you all have any just quick and dirty tips, the do's and don'ts for people who are concerned that someone close to them may be falling prey to these predatory organizations? And, you know, how do you engage with these folks? How do you talk to them or voice your concerns without alienating them?
Well, you know, one of our next episode that we will launch is with a cult expert, Yanya.
Yeah.
And she goes over, you know, she also was in a cult in the 60s, a very radicalized democratic cult. But she also has become an expert. And she talks about...
It was the 70s.
In the 70s. She talks about how people join and also why they stay and why we shouldn't scorn people who were in a cult.
But she says in order to, if your family members in it, like if they're falling prey, Ben, I think that's one thing. But if they're in it, unfortunately, there's not much you can say. You just got to keep loving them and talking to them about other things, reminding them of the life they had before this environment. And I will say, I don't know, from my personal experience and just people I've spoken to, you can plant a seed, right? You might say something to your uncle who is in one of these groups, and he may never talk to you for 5 years. But when he finally gets out, he might say to you, you know what? You said this thing to me 5 years ago. And at this point, you don't even remember what he's talking about because it was 5 years ago. But you planted
it's
that
like
seed.
It's like Command and Conquer 4.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But you planted that seed, and it sticks with them. So I'd say plant a seed if you can. It might take years for this family member to actually see the light. And unfortunately, there's not much you can do, but say your piece and hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing with, you know, if you had a sudden daughter, child, mother, whatever, sister who was, you know, a drug addict. You can't force them out of anything. You can't tell them what they're doing is wrong because that may actually push them further away. I would say consult a book, consult a therapist, consult an expert of the best way I can get my loved one out of said environment.
And there's also just groups where you can go to just talk about it. And there's support groups for people that have family members in cults.
I mean, it just feels like we're in such a divisive, like, political climate right now. And mm-hmm. even someone who isn't full QAnon might still feel very aggressively combative or feel like they need to or deserve to be heard in that way and just won't back down. So the idea of changing the subject doesn't really work, you know, at family dinners if you have that uncle that is just coming at you, knowing, you know, what your buttons are, you know, or what your boundaries are, and then just completely trampling all over them. So it almost feels like with some people, you got to cut people off if they won't respect, you know, your boundaries or like where you're willing to go in conversation. Because there's some people you just can't, you know, there's a line in the sand. And if you're going to cross that line, you're just going to be in a fight. So, I mean, do you have any thoughts around that? Like with the holidays coming up and things like that, like, it's a tough one. I don't know. I'm obviously speaking from a little bit of personal experience.
I'm with you, man.
And it's tough. It's tough, right?
You know, I think we have a divisiveness in this country, unlike we have seen. And Yanya talks about that. She's never seen this kind of divisiveness before. And in some ways, it just becomes easier. Like my shitty advice is like, just don't go to Thanksgiving family if you know to Thanksgiving dinner with your family. If
it's right.
And that's terrible advice because I think if someone does join a cult, they need to be alerted of that. Look, I was raised as a Mormon. And I've left the church and my family is all Mormon and I don't believe what they're doing is right and they don't believe what I'm doing is right. And it's very difficult for me to even bring up how I feel or difficult to bring up actual facts about the faith of Mormonism and the history of Mormonism without them poo-pooing it and immediately saying that's not true. So I don't know what it is or how to do it. I have no idea. I think the worst thing we can do is what we're doing, which is just staying in our own little bubble and not communicating with our friends or family that do have different beliefs than us.
I mean, I think yes, if they're crossing boundaries and they're now attacking you, then correct. You should stand up for yourself and do what it takes to take care of yourself. And if that means cutting them out of your life for the time being because they're too radicalized, that makes sense. But I think as the person with the knowledge and the person on the outside of the cult experience, if you can try not to judge them and realize they're brainwashed, this isn't them. This isn't their opinions. They have been manipulated into something and the brainwashing has ignited. And if you can just hold a space of empathy for the person that you know they really are and just hope they find themselves again. And when they do, you can be like, I never left you, man. Like, I'm here. But I had to leave you for this amount of time because of this, and I'm sorry. But I think if you can just sort of reframe your experience of them, it can help just to, like, not engage when they attack. That's fine. You know, do your thing. You're brainwashed right now, and I can't help you. And that's the hardest thing, I think, as a friend or family, when there's nothing you can actually do.
Or you can just throw a turkey leg at them during Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Just flip the table over.
Jeez.
Be less compassionate than that, right?
And I think that's a powerful message, and perhaps that's where we end today's conversation. Liz, Tyler, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Thank you for your insight and perspective. As we said, Was I in a Cult is a powerful show. It is out now wherever you find your favorite podcast. We'd love for you to listen to it. If you are in the audience with us today and you have an experience that you would like to share, you can always contact us. We'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. But for now, Tyler, Liz, where where can people learn more about your work as a show and as individuals?
I mean, I'm relatively Amish when it comes to social media. I really need to get better at it. But my Instagram is at Tyler Meesom. But also, you know, our show, obviously you can get it anywhere. We're also, you know, if any listener has had a cultic experience or has been in and left a cult, we'd love to hear your story. We're always looking for great storytellers. You can email us at
cults@iheartmedia.com. You can also call our hotline, 1-800-CULT-ISH. And you can also direct DM us, baby. Our Instagram is @wasIinacult. But yeah, get in touch with us. We want to tell your story. And my personal Instagram is the Iacuzzi.
That sounds like a cult to me. I don't know why.
It is.
Don't join. Don't join.
I only have followers on my page. That's everybody on Instagram.
And we, as always, want to hear from you folks. What do you think about the state of cults in modern America? Have you or someone you know been taken in by a cultic organization? If so, when did you realize what was happening? How did your loved one or you get out? We can't wait to hear your story. We try to make it easy to find us online.
Oh, indeed. You can find us all over the internet. We are on Facebook, YouTube, and also Twitter under the handle Conspiracy Stuff. We're also on Instagram at Conspiracy Stuff Show. And hey, whilst on the internet, why not navigate your browser or iDevice over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a favorable review? Because you know that you feel favorably about us. It helps people find the show, and it makes us all feel really good in our heart of hearts.
Yes. But if you don't want to do that, you can use your mouth to go through your phone into our ears. You can call 1-833-STDWYTK and leave us a voice message. Please do that. It's a lot of fun. You have 3 minutes. You can say whatever you want to. Please give yourself a cool nickname just for anonymity's sake. And if you've got too much to say that won't fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? Our address is
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island opens its gates April 20th.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.